Now tell me something that you remember from the last 2 days' worth of classes. Please. Yes, bye-bye.
I appreciate putting that, seeing the audience, those sages who are materialistic in mind. And therefore, started to ask Sukadeva Swami questions about how could the gopis become purified and their lost desires.
Thank you. Yes.
Krishna started speaking in a very bewildering way when the gopis came.
Yes.
He couldn't figure out which of the meanings he actually intends to convey.
What is the essence of the two meanings?
Go home, stay here.
Yes. So obviously that would get confusing. Simultaneously hearing go home and stay. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
So it seemed that Krishna was testing the motivation of the gopis, whether they had come to get something or whether they were running away from something. We heard some commentary that was explaining whether they had some tinge of karma, fruity mentality, or gyan.
What do you think?
He was testing them.
What do you think?
I think they were irresistibly drawn by the
sound of the flute. Thank you. Anyone else remember anything?
Well, different kinds of gopis.
Yes.
Sarana Siddha gopis and the other Nitya Siddha gopis.
Yes. Not everyone came. Not everyone could come. Yes.
The relatives tried to stop the gopis.
Yes.
And only few were stopped, those who needed some further purification. But those who were already completely pure, they left some duplicates and that went for the gospel.
Who find the...
Krishna was not only imitated through human behavior, he was actually attracted to the world of gopis.
Yeah. Who finds this pastime very mysterious? Me. Very mysterious. And very difficult to understand. Why is it difficult to understand? Because generally, even from the teaching point of view, when you're teaching something, you teach something new by teaching through it, teaching through something old that's already known. So the difficulty in teaching rasa, especially if one has not studied deeply the first 9 cantos of the Bhagavatam and even the first 28 chapters of the 10th canto, and especially if one hasn't become purified, and especially if one hasn't achieved in a very deep way the proper conceptions and proper purified conceptions, then naturally what is known when one teaches rasa or hears about rasa is the material dealings between men and women, between boys and girls, between ladies and gentlemen. So naturally, to teach that which is unknown, which is on the completely spiritual level, through teaching that which is known on the material level, the dealing between boys and girls, ladies and men, there is a problem, especially when dealing with Shringara Rasa or Madhurya Rasa. And that problem is that on the spiritual level, there is not the slightest trace of selfishness. There is not the slightest trace of lust. There is not the slightest trace of false ego. False ego means basically the desire to be the enjoyer that's embodied in one's identity. This is the cause, or maybe perhaps not the cause, but the prime result, or the first result of Krishna Bhule Se Jeev, of turning our back, forgetting Krishna, is that we achieve a false ego. And instead of being in our natural relationship with Krishna, with Him as the center, we adopt another identity. What identity? Any other identity. But the essence of all materialistic identities is that I am in the center. So the problem with the unpurified heart hearing about Krishna's lila, especially Krishna's dealing with the gopis, is that at the heart of the materialistic false ego is, or rather the bars, and at the heart of the materialistic false ego is sex. These are the bars that keep us in the material world. This is what makes the living entity conditioned and even suffering the pangs of birth and death. This is what makes him nevertheless wish to stay in the material world. Prabhupada once gave a lecture in Los Angeles where he talked about, and he encapsulated, the mentality of a materialist. And it was, if there is sex after death, I don't mind dying. Just assure me of that. I don't mind dying. Because that impulse is so deeply embedded in the essence of the conditioned soul's material existence in his false ego, that unless we become completely purified of the tendency to be the enjoyer, to consider ourselves the center of the material world, there'll be an extremely strong tendency to jump into the dealings with Krishna and his gopis, which are completely pure of any selfishness. They are completely spiritual. They are completely selfless. There is such a strong tendency, impelled by the very material energy herself, for the false ego's tendency to be the enjoyer, to jump right in. So therefore, as we're proceeding, in this most sacred discussion of the most intimate dealings between the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lila Purushottam Krishna, and His most beloved Ladini Shakti, His internal energy, the Braja Gopikas, we should keep in mind again and again and again and again, perhaps 1,000 times a day, that this has nothing to do with the dealings between the boys and the girls and the ladies and the men in this material world. It just simply has nothing to do with it at all. It has nothing to do with it. It may resemble it. It does resemble it, as the reflection resembles the reality. But in fact, it has nothing to do with it. Nothing. This is completely different. These dealings are on the spiritual level, the highest spiritual level. So, although we all know this, as members of Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON movement, we have been taught this. But still, we should remember it again and again and again, because of the very nature of the materialistic mind and false ego, it will attempt to jump in and assume the position of enjoyer. This is the function of false ego. This is the weapon of Maya, and this is why we're here. So the general caution is until one is purified, one shouldn't dwell on these topics for the reason that it's either misunderstood, and really it can be misunderstood. I had I only had one real example of someone philosophically misunderstanding it when I was in Bangladesh, and one Christian convert from a Hindu heritage told me, how can you worship a God who dances with the wives of other men in the middle of the night? What is his conception of God? It has nothing to do with Krishna. What is his understanding of who the Supreme Lord is and what the Rasa Leela is? Has nothing at all to do with this 100% pure, unselfish, unlustful topic of Krishna's most wonderful dealings with his most exalted, pure brother Ramani, brother Gopikas, the gopis of Vrindavan. It has nothing to do with it at all. It has nothing to do with it. Now, I've cut up a few of Prabhupada's lectures from this, in 1975, and I would like to play a segment of them for every day, just to remind us again and again that this has nothing to do with the material world. I will play one segment every day, short segment, 5 to 10 minutes. So, Adi, maybe you could hand out.
Both?
No, just hand out one. And please bring ahead the first one, the earlier one. How does it? It begins with Ladini Shakti Asmad Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritya. Yes. So we'll hear a little segment. And then they're consecutive, so it's really two lectures that we'll hear. One is divided into three parts and the other into four. So we'll just hear one after the other. Is there enough for one for everyone?
It's really not for everyone.
Oh, there's... we can look on.
I would give files to those who have the computer and not a piece of share. We have some guests.
Yes. Mayapur. Now this...
And also some people took before already. So this is the one with two columns. So those are already taken, please.
One with two columns?
Yes.
P3, that doesn't look like it. P1, that looks like it. Okay, this is just some of Prabhupada's mood and words.
Ladini Shakti Rasmaya Ekatmana Bhapi Bhuvi Pura Deho Vedam Gatoto Chaitanya Sam Prakatam Aduna Tadvayam Chaikamaptam Radha Bhava Dutishu Vulitam Nomi Krishna Sarupam. So, another feature of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described here by the author Kaviraj Goswami. In the beginning, he has been described as the ultimate absolute truth. Sarai Sajya Purna, the Bhagavan. absolute truth realized in three phases. The ultimate phase is Bhagavan, Sarisadya Purna. Bhagavan means full of six opulences. Not as nowadays there are so many Bhagavans. They have no Vaisadhya. But Bhagavan means Sarisadya Purna, full opulence, six kinds of opulence. Then, that Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead, has descended as incarnation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, just to bestow the topmost understanding of loving affairs with Krishna. Samarpayatum unnata ujjala rasam sabhaktisyam. In the bhakti platform, there are different stages. Spiritually, there is no difference. One in dasaras and one in madhujyaras. There is no difference. But a devotee likes to serve the Supreme Lord according to his inclination. Some wants to love him in Shantaras, some wants to love him in Dasaras, some are in friendly, then paternal love, then conjugal love. So, there is no difference between these different phases of loving affairs. But great devotees and learned scholars, they have given their decision that the loving affairs of Krishna in the conjugal platform, between husband and wife, or above that, between lover and beloved, that is very much prominent in the Western countries. Friend, boyfriend, girlfriend. In the spiritual world, that platform of remaining as friend without marriage, that is considered as the highest. And whatever we see here, a perverted reflection of that loving appears. Just like perverted reflection, it is described in the Bhagavad Gita, urdhamulam adhosakha asattam prahumabhyam. This material world has been described as having its root up, urdhamulam adhosakha, and the branches down. We have several times explained this, urdhamulam adhosakha. In the material world, this is a shadow. Unless it is shadow, how the mulam or the root can be upwards? We have got experience, a tree on the bank of a river. The tree is reflected, adosha, and the root up, shadow. So this is shadow. Real thing is in the spiritual world. Therefore it is called adosha. Shakha, in the spiritual world, the topmost part is this conjugal love. And here, the same thing when perversely reflected, it is the lowest abomination. We should know this, that in the spiritual world, to remain as girlfriend and boyfriend, that is the topmost pleasure. And in the material world, the same thing is the most abominable. Therefore, it is adho-shakha. We cannot imitate the loving affairs of Krishna and Radharani unless we understand the real fact. The real fact is described here, the Radha Krishna Pranaya Brigiti Alladini Shakti.
That is the real fact. That's all we'll hear right now. Tomorrow, Krishna willing, we shall continue. But the real fact is that the dealings between Radha and Krishna are all manifestations of Krishna's internal energy, his Ladini Shakti. And they are not the dealings of the perverted dealings of the material world. So please bring these to the class tomorrow as well. Now, Prabhupada, in that lecture, he mentioned that this is the highest in the spiritual realm. This is the highest in intimacy, loving intimacy in relationship with Krishna. So, why do we, what are we trying to gain, and why do we hear this at this particular point? Of course, we in this particular class have studied the Bhagavatam from the first canto, and now we're on the 29th chapter of the 10th canto, so going in sequence, it's quite natural, and we should respect the sequence of the presentation of Srila Vyasadeva. So in that sense, it's completely natural. But what are we trying to gain by reading and hearing the Bhagavatam on this level, and especially the commentaries of Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, who, like no one else, reveals the essence of what is actually going on? What we are trying to gain is somehow or another, by the mercy of the Bhagavatam, to get a glimpse, a touch of the incredible purity of the hearts of the Braja Gopis. And somehow, if a little bit of that can touch our consciousness, and we can get a glimpse of what love actually is, and not only a glimpse, but the slightest, from a distance, taste of what Goloka Vrindavan is about, what the dealings between Radha and Krishna are about. If we can just touch that with our consciousness, even if it is from a distance, then we are extremely fortunate. Extremely fortunate. Again, and before we begin actually in this class reading the next two verses of Krishna's playful words with the Braja Gopis, I wanted to read and hear Prabhupada's purport to one very important verse that again makes the same point. The verses Atma Endriya Priti Vancha Tari Bala Bali Kam. That the definition of kam on the material level, or lust, or filled with desire on the material level, is Atma Endriya Priti. That my senses, or I am in the center. That is what defines lust. And on the other hand, what defines love is Krishna Indriya Priti Icha Dhari Premanam. Love holds the name, that very name of prema, because it is simply interested in Krishna Indriya Priti, the satisfaction of Krishna. And this is what we're going to see with the Braja Gopikas, that their only interest is to satisfy Krishna. They don't care about anything else. They, by their consciousness, put into perspective the selfish material dealings in the material world, the selfish lustful dealings of the material world. They show, they reveal what love is. Now to this verse, Prabhupada has written a very wonderful but simple purport. The verse itself again is Atmendriya Priti Vansha Tari Balikam Krishna Endriya Priti Iksha Dari Premanam. The desire to gratify one's own senses is kam, or lust. This is at the beginning of Adi 4 in Chaitanya Charitamrita text 165. The desire to gratify one's own senses is kam, or lust, but the desire to please the senses of Lord Krishna is prema, or love. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The revealed scriptures describe pure love as follows. Savarta dvamsa rahitam satyapi dvamsakarane yadbhava bandhanam junor saprema parikirtita. If there is ample reason for the dissolution of a conjugal relationship, and yet such a dissolution does not take place, such a relationship of intimate love is called pure. The predominated gopis were bound to Krishna in such pure love. For them, there was no question of sexual love based on sense gratification. Their only engagement in life was to see Krishna happy in all respects, regardless of their own personal interests. They dedicated their souls not only for the satisfaction of the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, There was not the slightest tinge of sexual love between the gopis and Krishna. It has nothing to do with the dealings between boys and girls in this world, ladies and men in this world. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita asserts with authority that sexual love is a matter of personal sense enjoyment. All the regulative principles in the Vedas pertaining to desires for popularity, fatherhood, wealth, and so on are different phases of sense gratification. Acts of sense gratification may be performed under the cover of public welfare, nationalism, religion, altruism, ethical codes, biblical codes, health directives, fruit of actions, bashfulness, tolerance, personal comfort, liberation from material bondage, progress, family affection, or fear of social ostracism or legal punishment. But all these categories are different subdivisions of one substance, sense gratification. All such good acts are performed basically for one's own sense gratification, for no one can sacrifice his personal interest while discharging these much advertised moral and religious principles. But above all this is a transcendental stage in which one feels himself to be only an eternal servitor of Krishna, the Absolute Personality of Godhead. All acts performed in the sense of servitude, in this sense of servitude, are called pure love of God, because they are performed for the absolute sense gratification of Sri Krishna. However, any act performed for the purpose of enjoying its fruits or results, subtle or gross, is an act of sense gratification. And such actions are visible sometimes in gross and subtle forms. So Prabhupada lays it out, the difference very, very, very clearly there, in very simple, easy to understand, impossible to avoid language. That's Prabhupada's speciality. Easy to understand and impossible to avoid. So if we can touch the consciousness of the Braja Gopis, which has nothing to do with this material world, which is situated on the highest level of love for Krishna in the transcendental land of Vrindavan, and if somehow within our heart it will give birth to a desire by Krishna's mercy to one day become servants of the servants of the servants, Gopi Bharta, Parakamalaya, Dasa, Dasa, Nadasa, then that is most fortunate. What is the benefit of coming to that level of consciousness of loving Krishna? That a tiny, insignificant soul can enjoy more than the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead. Enjoy the highest bliss. And that, of course, is the natural consciousness of the soul. This is what we are lacking, our eternal, spiritual, selfless connection with Krishna. So, on this, I would like to begin speaking, reading from the actual texts, with first having presented this very grave background. So what verse? Which is the first one we're supposed to read? Which is the last one we read yesterday? 24. Yes, 20. So 24 we begin with? Because 24 to 26 are together. Bhartu Shushushanam Strinam Parodamo Yamayaya Tad Bandunam Shakalyana Prajanam Chanuposhanam. So Krishna is teasing the gopis, and the reasons why he's doing this are very, very spiritually complicated. In some senses, we can say that he's testing them. In other senses, he's just playing, because Krishna is so playful. And in another sense, he wants something from them. He wants to hear what is in the depth of their consciousness, what desires are filling their consciousness. And on another sense, so he's acting in such a way that he will evoke that by standing in their way of fulfilling their desires. Because people, it is considered quite inappropriate to speak about one's deepest desires, especially if they are filled with this type of desire of actual kam, actual spirit or kam. It is considered inappropriate to speak about one's desires like that directly. Everything on the conjugal level must be done indirect. And Krishna and the gopis are the master of the indirect. And what is the purpose of their mastering and acting indirectly? It is all for the purpose of rasa. It is for the purpose of increasing the waves of ecstasy on the ocean of the eternal, pure, spiritual, loving relationship. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has explained why Shantaras is not considered a ras, and how ironic it is that from the material level, if a person was a sage on the Shantarasa level, he would look at the people who are engaged in conjugal loving affairs as something abominable, as engaging in something abominable, and he would just be completely renounced and completely peaceful, completely above all the ups and downs that take place, just as a matter of course in loving dealings between men and women, completely aloof from the extreme heights and then the lows and the fighting and the this and the that and the arguments and the ups and downs. But on the spiritual level, Shantaras, because it is just Shanta, there is no emotion, there is no ups and downs, it is completely aloof and filled with Shanta, this is not even considered a rasa. A rasa means that one rides the waves of these spiritual emotions. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained, because Shanta rasa is Shanta, it is not actually a rasa. And what's considered abominable by the Shanta rasas, the renunciants on the highest spiritual level, is the most wonderful, wonderfully amazing, ecstatic spiritual experience. And Krishna's expertise is to churn this ocean of rasa. And the gopis' expertise is to churn this ocean of rasa. And the whole land of Vrindavan is meant to facilitate, to perform a background, and to churn this ocean of rasa so that the waves of Krishna's pleasure will rise to even newer and greater heights, and the gopis will come along, and Krishna is doing that to them now. If he would have said, if they would have eagerly come to him, and he would have said, very good, let's get down to business, let's enjoy, then immediately there's no rasa. Because for rasa to take place, there has to be conflict. There has to be difference in mood. So because they've adopted a dakshin mood, because why? They've become very submissive. Krishna calls them and they immediately come, because Krishna has used his ultimate weapon. And we shall hear about this, even though we've heard about it already, we will still hear about it again. He's used his ultimate weapon, his flute, which has driven the gopis completely mad. And they've left everything, all their homes, their common sense, their moral obligations, their duties, in the ecstasy, being carried by this wave of ecstatic Krishna conscious prema. Krishna has used this weapon to break the river of their prema beyond the banks, beyond the boundaries that has ever been broken before. So they're pulled to him, and their mood is one of complete eagerness to be with Krishna, to unite with Krishna. So there, in this, one can say, aggressive mood, and Krishna, therefore, to make the rasa increase, he takes on a disinterested mood, which is usually the feminine mood. When the male is aggressive, then the woman, to increase the rasa, naturally, she takes a step back and acts disinterested. And that increases the eagerness. Again, I'll say it, this is only the 73rd time I've said it. This has nothing to do with the material world, except that the material world is a reflection I'm going to say it again and again. If I don't reach 1,000, I haven't done well. It has nothing to do with the material world, but the material world, the dealings of the material world, can give us a glimpse, being the reflection of reality, of how the spiritual world is working. So Krishna has adopted this disinterested pose to inflame their rasa. And that is just what's going to happen. And we shall hear about that a little bit later. The highest, so Krishna in his disinterested mood, in text 24, says, the highest religious duty for a woman is to sincerely serve her husband, behave well towards her husband's family, and take good care of her children. One by one, as a matter of course, Krishna is enumerating the obstacles that the gopis have effortlessly crossed beyond to attain him in the forest of Vrindavan, in Vamsivad, at Vamsivad, in the night, as he's played his flute. He's effortlessly, they've effortlessly crossed all the obstacles that have been named and will be obtained by the force of the power of their prema. Everything has been proved insignificant. They haven't cared about anything. Here's the Bhaktivedanta purport. Srila Jiva Goswami astutely points out that here that the gopis' real eternal husband is Lord Krishna, not their so-called husbands at home, who falsely consider the gopis their property. Thus, a strict interpretation of the word amayaya without illusion reveals that the supreme religious duty for the gopis is to serve Sri Krishna, their real lover. So in this way, everything that Krishna says in his own most wonderful way, because Krishna is the most clever of all speakers too, he's saying, don't come, or now that you've seen the forest, swagatam, swagatam, welcome, you've seen the forest. The gopis are looking all around because Krishna is talking to them in such a discouraging way. They're looking around the forest, and Krishna is saying, now that you've seen the forest, because they won't look at him because he's speaking in this way. It is difficult, it is impossible for to understand what their consciousness is like, because it is so hard for us to have even experienced in this world even the reflection of love. The perverted reflection of love is rare in this world. What to speak of the actual commodity of real love, which is in the spiritual world. People are brought up lonely and loveless as they go through life. Lonely and loveless. So therefore, we don't get hit with the emotions, either on the spiritual level or the material level, that the gopis are being hit with. Of course, not on the spiritual level, unless we're actually on that level, but even on the material level, to be in love with someone and leaving everything, sacrificing everything for that person, and leaving aside your family. And then when you get there, that person says, welcome, you've seen the forest, thank you, go home. And the gopis, but they're thinking, Krishna, we've come for you, we've come for you. You've told us, you've told us a year ago when you've stolen the clothes of the unmarried and married gopis too, you've promised us that our time will come. But not only that, you've called us and drove us mad. You've pulled us here by the call of your flute. And now that we're here, you're indifferent to us. our hearts, their hearts were just cracking. And he's giving them moral instructions after calling them with this irresistibly with the sound of his flute. Srila Sridhar Swami comments that 24, 25, and 26, in these verses, Krishna tells the real, seeable, and invisible causes of fear that the gopis are confronting by coming to Krishna in the middle of the night. And he tries to stop them by bringing to their attention the actual fearful situation that they're in. So what's the first one? That they're breaking their duty, their husband and the husband's family. You should be afraid of this. And your children are not being taken care of. What could be more heart-rending to a lady's consciousness? And for the gopis, these things amounted to simply zero because they have been completely captivated by their love for Krishna. What is their love like? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. The gopis reply, "But if we, as you say, have great love for you, then why are you repeatedly telling us to return home? It is not possible for one who is the loving subject to give up the person who is the object of that love. How could we give you up?" Krishna, "It is true that you're full of affection, but I must speak to uphold religious principles. Therefore, please listen." He's preaching to them. He's called them, and now he's preaching to them moral principles. Mundane moral principles. The principles that uphold the entirety of a material society. The principles that are 100% required for society to be run in a humane and efficient and proper moral way. These, when compared to love for Krishna, are nothing. And obviously, we cannot imitate not being on that platform. "I must speak to you to uphold religious principles. Therefore, please listen as I advise you according to the scriptures. When someone's heart is inflamed by love, the last thing they want is to be preached to. Therefore, please listen as I advise you according to the scriptures and quoted to from Shastra. Serving the husband with complete steadiness is the wife's supreme duty, her paradharma. You should also serve the husband's parents." And of course, Krishna, being very, very, very unlimitedly clever, there is an opposite meaning, which is alluded to in the purport, that says, "For you, the beautiful women of Braja, serving the husband is not your duty. It is others' duty, paradharma, for the scriptures." And he gives a scriptural quote. "And since I am Vishnu, and you are all Vaishnavas, worshipping me alone is your proper religious duty. Anything else is simply irreligious, and therefore it is not your duty." So there is religious duty, and then there is the purpose, the ultimate purpose of religious duty. And the religious duties for the purpose that they are ultimately serving are sacrificed. So this preaching is very dangerous because it can be so easily misused and it can be so easily misunderstood. But what makes everything perfect is that the speaker is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the purpose of all religious principles, Parodharma, is bhakti ahaituki, is to please him and to serve him and to love him. And these Braja Gopis have already surmounted the mountain of everything material. They've already reached the peak of spiritual, and they are in the highest level, at the highest moments, practically speaking, of pleasing Krishna with their service, by their very complete loving, desiring, rasik emotion to love him and please him. They're inflamed, and they were inflamed by the call of his flute. So Krishna is telling them, serve your parents, and he's saying, your real duty is to serve me. The best activity is to give up all other duties, dharmas, and worship me. So there are so many reasons why everything takes place. There are multi reasons. There are teaching reasons. There are philosophical reasons. But actually the highest reason is not the teaching, not the philosophy, not the metaphors that are attached to everything. It is simply the lila. It is just Krishna's loving dealings with his most beloved devotees. This is the highest reason why Krishna does what he does, and why the gopis are acting the way they do. Everyone is being impelled. What's driving them is love, is the purest form of love. 25. Women, Krishna continues, who desire a good destination in the next life should never abandon a husband who has not fallen from his religious standards, even if he's obnoxious, unfortunate, old, unintelligent, sickly, or poor. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes a similar statement from Smriti Shastri Patim Tva Apitatam Bhajit. One should serve a master who is not fallen. Sometimes the foolish argument is given that even if a husband falls down from spiritual principles, his wife should continue to follow him since he is her guru. In fact, since Krishna consciousness cannot be subordinated to any other religious principle, a guru who engages his followers in materialistic sinful activities loses his status as a guru. Srila Prabhupada stated that the system of monarchy collapsed in Europe because the monarchs abused and exploited their position. Similarly, in the Western world, men have abused and exploited women. And of course, women have never abused and exploited men. And now there is a popular movement in which women reject the authority of their husbands. Ideally, men should be staunch in spiritual life and give pure, sincere guidance to the women under their care. The gopis, of course, being on the highest platform of spiritual perfection, were transcendental to all positive and negative religious considerations. That word, transcendental, we use it so many times, we throw it out, and we completely forget, in one sense, what it means even. What it means is that the gopis were possessed of the highest love for Krishna, and that was what was impelling them. They love Krishna, not the words love Krishna, but they love Krishna. Their hearts were aflame with love for Krishna. In other words, they were the eternal lovers of the Absolute Truth. And Krishna, this is Krishna's Bhagavan form of the Absolute Truth. Let's hear what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments in his Sarat Darshani. He's going to, of course, in his wonderful way, explained both sides, the moral side, the teaching side, the side where Krishna is pushing them, telling them to go home. It's like if there's a tidal wave, a tsunami that has this huge, not only is this a huge wave, but there's the force of the ocean that's pushing this huge wave. And the gopis' love is like a tidal wave. Can we try to use the metaphor of a tidal wave to understand the gopis' love? There's a huge wave, a front, but there's the force of the ocean. Their love is like an ocean that's pushing. And there is Krishna going like this. And he's the unlimited. If we use you can put up a building or a restraining wall, okay? And the ocean is going to push its way over that restraining wall because it's the ocean. It's unstoppable. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is no ordinary restraining wall. He's all powerful. He's unlimitedly powerful. And he's trying to stop it on one level. So who's going to win this battle? The tidal wave of the gopis' love or the unstoppable object, the immovable object of Krishna's activity? Of course we know the answer. Because first of all, Krishna wants to be moved. He's speaking doubly also. He's welcoming them. Of course he wants them to come. Of course he wants them to come. How do we know? Huh? But yes, because he's played his flute. He's pulled them out of their houses. He's caused them to be mad. He's created the tidal wave in a sense. And just, he says, no, I think it's good. You should be very moral right now. And they're like clawing the ground with their feet. And they're frustrated. But their love for him, it is so powerful that it cannot be lessened and it cannot be increased. Can we understand what this love is like? Can we understand what a tidal wave is like? Unless we've been knocked over by it. The Vraja Gopis replied, you should serve your husbands. How can we, who have such affection for you, serve our husbands who are unappealing, unfavorable, and suitable? It sounds like they're being selfish. We just love you. We don't love our husbands. But again, the nature of love means they're not being selfish at all. They love Krishna. But Krishna says, if your husbands are not of good character, but not sinful, then you should still serve them. For the scriptures say, patim tva pititam bhajit. One should serve the husband who has not fallen, from the Bhagavatam. In other words, a fallen husband should be abandoned because he will be a cause of the wife's own fall down. The word locate shubir means by those who want the happiness of achieving the same planet as their husband in their next life. You won't get to the higher planets in this way. Impelled by love, the tidal wave of love, the alternate explanation, Krishna is saying, husbands should not be rejected by women who are concerned with the insignificant reputation and happiness found in this world and the next. But because you gopis have already rejected both worlds, which worlds? This world and the next, this life, next life, and lives unlimitedly after that, We have given to you, Krishna, to do it as you like. We are yours. We want here to get a glimpse of what love is. Because then if we get a glimpse of what love is, and then we hear about, and we're hearing it, and then later on, the Kriditam verse, where Sukadev says, if you hear about these pastimes, the traces of lust that are in your heart, the hearer's heart, will be removed. If we understand what we're hearing, then it will work. It will purify us. And if we just superficially stay on the level, oh, how cute and how clever and how nice, then my understanding is it won't purify us, and in fact it will increase our own lust. Or it may do that. But we should see what love is. The purity, the selflessness of it. And then we should take a look at our consciousness. As we are hearing about real love, and then we will have to put our heads downward and understand why it is that we are not with Krishna now in the spiritual world. It is because of the darkness, the blackness, the selfishness, the lustfulness of my heart. But because you gopis have already rejected both worlds, subtly and grossly not wanting anything from this world or the next world, sometimes we put our desires on hold for the next time around. We'll do better, we think, because we're acting piously in a devotionally way even. So I'll get all the things that frustrate me that I didn't have in this life, and my, if only I would have had this, the laments that sit deeply in our hearts. Only if I had this kind of a body, or that kind of a talent, or this kind of a thing, or was more beautiful, more intelligent, more wealthy, and on and on and on and on, or even more renounced, or learned, or musically inclined, or famous, or whatever. The desires of the next world, okay, I won't have them now, but I hold on to them. The gopis wanted nothing in this world or the next, because everything had already been given to Krishna. They loved him. But because you gopis have already rejected both worlds and are instead frolicking in the vast ocean of enjoying my sweetness, and this, my dear devotees, is the price of frolicking in the vast ocean of Krishna's sweetness, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It is loving Krishna and not loving anything of this world. This life, or the next, or two more, or three more, or forevermore. Are we ready to pay the price? It's interesting to consider at times, what exactly is it that holds me back? And if you, sometimes we even get some glimpses of some of the things that hold us back. Maybe doubts, maybe desires, maybe this, maybe that. So these we consider, we hear more, we chant more, we serve more, we pray more, and we see what we want. Because you gopis have already rejected both worlds and are instead frolicking in the vast ocean of enjoying my sweetness, from the very beginning you have given up the service of your husbands. You never wanted anything. You're all basically by this point on the Nitya Siddha platform. Something like that. You're all, you never wanted anything. So Krishna's speaking. And then the 26th verse, which is the final verse in these three, Krishna continues, where he's telling the fearful things. You won't get the benefit of a good next birth if you don't go home and if you stay in the forest with me. And of course, for the gopis, what do they care on the material level? For a woman from a respectable family, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. And of course, interestingly enough, as Prabhupada points out in his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead book, these instructions that Krishna is giving the gopis, from the level of the gopis, they are all insignificant. But they are not actually insignificant at all for the upholding and the what is required on the to advance spiritually, to uphold society, to have a society, a community. These things are required. They are not to be taken lightly. But the gopis are not light. They are the heaviest, because their heaviness is their prema. For a woman from a respectable family, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. They bar her from heaven. They ruin her reputation and bring her difficulty and fear. So go home, my dear gopis. Krishna is playing the disinterested moralist. For their own good, he's instructing them. What do you think about that? This is rasa. He's churning. Because in rasa, what happens if everyone turns one way? If your kid doesn't work that way. When you're churning, it's like this. One hand goes one way and the other hand has to go the other way. So Krishna's pulling this way. If the gopis were just going the same direction, then there would be nothing happening. Or if the gopis were going in the same direction and Krishna was just following along, let's go, then there would be no rasa churn. Here's the comment of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This verse inspired the following dialogue. This is Krishna in the role of moralist preacher. You good girls have ordinary affection for me, by which your very natures, by any special affection, you good girls have ordinary affection for me by your very natures. But any special affection, so he's acknowledging, yes, you have affection for me. But any special affection, just like it's natural, people deal, they have affection for each other. Okay. So Krishna says, I know you have affection for me. You've come out because, you know, you like me. We're friends. But any affection, any special affection, which is contrary to the principles of religion, should be given up. Illicit. Why? Why? Because they don't lead to any good. Illicit connections do not lead to swagaloka. Aswagyam. They will not bring you to heaven, to the higher realms. Vajagopis, we do not care for Swagaloka. They're looking at Krishna. But it will also destroy your reputation. Ayashayam. We don't care for reputation, our reputations. You are speaking falsely, Krishna says. No, what we are saying is not false, because we consider it to be the utmost importance. Krishna is playing with them and they're sincerely just Such affairs are troublesome and full of difficulties due to the prohibitions of your husbands and others. Vrila Gopis say, the trouble is, that trouble that it is not going to be appreciated by our husbands and other relatives is rather the cause of the greatest happiness for girls like us who are full of raga, who are full of attachment to you, absorption in you, absorption in your beauty, in your qualities, in your personality, in your charming words, in your flute playing. Our consciousness is completely absorbed in you. And it is the greatest pleasure for us to leave them behind. We don't care in the slightest bit to get you. This is our happiness. But, Krishna says, this creates fear. Bhayavaham. For the body, you'll be beaten. And for one's next life, lower birth, on account of its being forbidden both by worldly customs, worldly ethics, and by Shastra. Vajagopis, how can that be? This so-called fear, that we would feel fear, is rather a foundation for experiencing rasa. Because, anyway, this is psychology this is the psychology of paramour love. That unless there is the element of danger and the giving up of something and the fear of being caught, there is the rasa of madhurya of this paramour love doesn't become generated. So the gopis bring out a technical, psychological, shastric even point here. This is the foundation for experiencing rasa, as stated in the scriptures. When love is forbidden and the doe-eyed beloved is difficult to attain, then the passionate lover's heart becomes very attached to his beloved. Quoted from Pratisadarbha. Krishna says, in all times and places, adulterous affairs are always condemned for respectable women. Even if you readily consent to bear all condemnation to fulfill your desires, how can I do anything that will cause you, the objects of my love, to become condemned? Therefore I say, please return to Braja. Krishna is very, very tricky in the way he speaks. He's using the fact that he loves them. He's expressing it for the first time, though. I love you, and therefore for your interest, I'm sending you home. But there is an alternative explanation to Krishna's words. Everywhere in the world, illicit affairs are condemned. But you gopis have heard from the mouth of Gaga that I am equal, Narayana Samo Ganai. I am equal to Lord Narayan. There is nothing contemptible in having me as a paramour. Since I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I transcend ordinary auspicious and inauspicious activities. Unless we have a conception very, very deeply planted in our consciousness of who Krishna is, we will not be able to accept what's going on here, actually, on a deep level, on a deep spiritual level, on a deep level of truth, that yes, every living entity has his own or her own rasa, relationship with Krishna, and to bring that to its ultimate, to its highest, is the perfection of our existence. To the ultimate, to the highest means to the most greatest points of, what word am I thinking of? What word am I thinking of? Any? No? Great love, the greatest point of? No? But yeah, these are all true, but what? You have to be able to guess what I'm thinking. intimacy. The greatest level of intimacy. That's where love really shines the most. So the fearful nature of the apatya, paramour love, brings it the shared risks, brings the intimacy even closer. Even Sudama in a different rasa, when he was with Krishna, caught by Krishna in the rainstorm, when they were at the home of, at the Gurukula of Sandipani Muni, it was the element of them being together in a fearful situation where the rain was falling and the thunder and the lightning, and there was no one around them. It was the intimacy of that sakyarasa that was really the thing that they remembered when they were together so many years later. It was the intimacy, and fear was an element of that. It's in rasa. And therefore, we are supposed to have studied the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar of Devotion first, so we understand something about rasa, how it's generated, what its purposes are, and the difference between mundane rasa and spiritual rasa, etc., etc. So this is Krishna who's playing in this way. Now Krishna has two more very important words of advice to give the gopis before they take over and begin their response according to Krishna's desires. And even though we started a bit late and we had a fairly lengthy introduction, we'll end here and resume exactly at 12:30 again.